On this edition for Saturday, September 21st, the U.S. says it will provide defense support to Saudi Arabia.
Our house is on fire.
Taking the lead on climate change. And in our signature segment, cracking down on gold mining in Peru. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
From the Tisch WNET studios at Lincoln Center in New York, Megan Thompson.
Good evening and thank you for joining us. The United States will send what the Pentagon says is, quote, a modest number of troops to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates soon, but is not planning a military strike on Iran. At a news conference late yesterday, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Joseph Dunford and Secretary of Defense Mark Esper told reporters the U.S. is showing restraint after an attack on Saudi oil facilities last weekend that the U.S. blames on Iran.
This is the first step we're taking with regard to responding to these attacks. And again, for the reasons I outlined, to help bolster the defenses of Saudi Arabia and provide equipment to both the Saudis and UAE. A second, to ensure the free flow of commerce through the strait. And third, to ensure we protect and defend the international rules-based order and try and convince the Iranians to get back on a diplomatic path.
The U.S. will also send additional defense systems to secure oil facilities. The number of troops is expected to be in the hundreds. There were few other details released. In Iran today, the chief commander of the Revolutionary Guard appeared at a news conference to say his country has carried out war exercises and is, quote, ready for any scenario. Iran denies any involvement in the September 14th attacks. Houthi forces, who are fighting against a Saudi-led coalition for control of Yemen, first claimed responsibility for the drone and possible missile attacks that knocked 50% of Saudi Arabia's oil production offline. In Hong Kong today, there were violent protests again for the 16th week. Pro-democracy demonstrators threw gasoline bombs at police who responded with tear gas. The protests are threatening to overshadow plans by China's Communist Party to celebrate its 70th anniversary in power on October 1st. And in Paris today, police used tear gas to disperse anti-government yellow vest demonstrators who are now in their 45th week of protests against economic policies of the government of President Emmanuel Macron. Dozens of injuries were reported today after a 5.6 magnitude earthquake struck Albania. A 5.1 magnitude aftershock soon followed, and witnesses reported damaged homes and power outages. The Albanian prime minister canceled a trip to the United Nations and returned home to assess the damage. Today's earthquake was the strongest to hit Albania in 30 years, according to the defense ministry. California, 22 other states, and several cities filed a lawsuit in federal court yesterday to stop the Trump administration from revoking California's right to set its own fuel emission standards. The suit against the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration charges that the move exceeds the agency's authority. Federal law sets standards for vehicle emissions, but California has been allowed to set tougher rules since the 1970s because it has the most cars and trucks on the roads. 13 other states, plus the District of Columbia, have since adopted California's tougher emission standards. In Massachusetts today, Congressmember Joe Kennedy III officially added his name to the list of Democrats challenging incumbent U.S. Senator Ed Markey. The 38-year-old grandson of the late Robert Kennedy announced his run at an event in East Boston. The neighborhood is where the political family first settled after arriving from Ireland more than a century ago. Senator Markey, who is 73, was first elected to Congress in 1976. Joe Kennedy was first elected in 2012. Today at the United Nations, young leaders are gathering for a youth climate summit where they will voice their concerns and offer solutions for a warming planet. Yesterday, millions of young people around the world participated in a global climate strike. Producer Maya Navon and associate producer Nina Jung covered the strike here in New York City for WNET's Peril and Promise initiative, addressing the challenge of climate change. So you guys were downtown yesterday. You were covering these protests. Maya, tell us, what was the scene like? Who was there?
There were so many people there. There's reports that there was 250,000 plus people there. And it was really intergenerational. We saw people of all ages really coming out to have their voices be heard. And there was so much excitement in the air, and you just felt this great energy. I will say that the majority of the people were youth, high school students, middle school students, and they were out in full force.
I assume you guys probably talked to some of the protesters. What kinds of things were they saying to you about why they were there?
A lot of them mentioned Greta Thunberg being a huge inspiration and icon for the movement. A lot of the posters that we saw referenced to what are now her famous phrases of the house is on fire, unite behind the science. These are phrases that Greta has been repeating over and over to the media, and it's what people have been rallying behind.
So we're talking about the Swedish activist, Greta Thunberg, and she was actually there, right? She addressed the crowd. I mean, what was that like?
It was like a rock star had showed up. As soon as she got on the stage, people rushed towards the stage and were chanting her name over and over, and you just felt this excitement. She's really become somewhat of an icon to young people because I think they really feel, they really resonate with her message. And so it was very exciting to hear her speak, and you could tell that everyone there was listening closely to what she had to say.
The protests here in New York were just part of protests all around the world. Talk about the timing. Why these protests now?
I think these protests now, because people and youth, frankly, are ready for change. They want to hold leaders accountable, and they're really, really looking towards the UN Climate Summit, which is happening on Monday here in New York, to see what leaders will do. Will they take action? And even if they don't, and they don't meet their demands, their fire is fueled. They are really excited to continue to have their voices be heard and hold adults accountable. And that's really what the youth keep saying.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this generation has really embraced climate change in a new way. And they're talking about it in new ways.
I mean, I think the youth kind of bring a more vibrant energy to a discussion that has been happening for decades. But right now, I think the youth kind of bring an urgency because, as we know, they are the future. And there's this pressure of the 11 years that we have before temperatures increase by 2 degrees. And they're not taking that lightly. And you can see that not just in the amounts of people who are gathering at these strikes, but you see it in more lighthearted ways as well. Like when we were at the strike, we saw really just tongue-in-cheek, like sarcastic signs pointing at meme culture even. I mean, you can't have a Gen Z strike without memes. So just the youth, I think, are kind of poking fun and bringing to light the fact that adults haven't addressed this as the urgent crisis that it is, and they are stepping up to do so.
All right, Mayana Vaughn, Nina Jung, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
For more on the United Nations Youth Climate Summit, visit pbs.org/newshour. Destruction of the Amazon rainforest is accelerating, with recent statistics showing 870 square miles was lost in July alone, nearly triple that of the same period last year. And the fires currently burning in Brazil are only part of the story. In Peru, where some 300,000 square miles of forest exist, illegal gold mining has caused devastation of its own. But as NewsHour Weekend special correspondent Leo Schwartz and New York University's Global Beat program report, there's one region where Peru is having some success against the trend.
In the heart of the Peruvian Amazon lies a man-made desert. It was once pristine rainforest, but a decade of illegal gold mining has transformed it into a wasteland. Peru is the seventh largest gold producer in the world. The U.S. imports around $2 billion worth a year, despite the fact that an estimated 20% of it is illegally mined in places like the Madre de Dios region. It's a sparsely inhabited jungle the size of Indiana, along Peru's borders with Bolivia and Brazil. Gold extraction isn't illegal everywhere in Madre de Dios, but is never allowed inside national reserves or the buffer zones around them. Government officials estimate that as many as 40,000 illegal miners have occupied these areas, clearing trees, digging pits, and infusing the ground with mercury. The toxic chemical draws the precious gold out of the sand and dirt, but is then left behind, poisoning the landscape. But at least some of those miners are now on the run. In February, the Peruvian government declared a state of emergency in Madre de Dios, and sent in 1,800 army troops and police. Today, there are 7 fixed bases and a network of field sites. It's called Operation Mercury. Jorge Cotito is a colonel with the Peruvian National Police.
The miners had formed what we could call a paramilitary base, and nobody could enter this area. It was a lawless zone. It was damaging the ecology of the Peruvian jungle and the Amazon, which is one of the lungs of the world. If forceful action wasn't taken, deep ecological damage was going to continue.
Peru's part of the Amazon alone makes up the 4th largest tropical rainforest in the world. It's a biodiversity hotspot, home to species found nowhere else. But the destruction of this precious resource has been accelerating.
What we see, taking a look at the satellite data, is that 2018 is the highest record on year for deforestation in this part of the Amazon.
Luis Fernandez is a former U.S. EPA specialist who now runs the Independent Center for Amazonian Scientific Innovation in Peru. A decade ago, Fernandez saw what he calls a perfect storm brewing in Madre de Dios, starting with the construction of the transoceanic highway that cut right across this gold-rich land and drew impoverished Peruvians from around the country to previously uninhabited areas.
The real tipping point was the economic crisis in 2008, because that is when the price of gold skyrocketed. It sparked a massive gold boom. So you have people flooding the area, going on a brand new road, into an area that is supposed to not be habited. Then you had just weak local governance. Once those factors all came together and overlapped, then you saw like this massive explosion inside protected areas where you just never saw it before.
With the influx of mining, entire settlements have sprung up, like this one along the highway. It exists only to serve miners and their families. Even under the state of emergency, it remains a dangerous place for authorities and outsiders. Police insisted we film it only with their armed escort.
There was a great deal of illicit activity here, from human trafficking to money laundering, corruption, hitmen. Even mass graves were found here. This was a totally lawless place, and it was growing.
And so, government forces arrived in Madre de Dios with much fanfare, patrolling populated areas and overflying the jungle canopy to identify remaining illegal mining operations. Sometimes they get tips from local residents, as was the case on this day, leading Colonel Cotito to assemble a small field patrol. It went deep into an area called La Pampa, the ground zero of illegal mining. An hour into the mission, the police officers find a man standing alone next to an abandoned mining site and detain him on suspicion of illegal gold extraction. He will be brought back to the main base to be interviewed by prosecutors. The patrol resumes the hunt and soon finds a squalid mining camp. The men here lead them to their nearby dredging platform. It appears to have been recently used. The troops strap dynamite to the rig and then blow it up. Back at the camp, the troops set fire to the huts and all of the miners' possessions. They hope to ensure that no one can mine here again. An environmental crackdown of this intensity is new for a country well known for corruption. The previous governor of Madre de Dios had been a gold miner himself and allowed the illegal industry to grow unchecked. But that all changed with the 2018 election of a new governor, Luis Hidalgo. He ran on the promise to end illegal mining and a wave of street crime that had come with it. Hidalgo believes previous attempts were half-hearted. He says this state of emergency will succeed.
All of the previous governments have come and conducted interdictions for only 15 days, destroying the machines, expelling the people that were working, and later leaving, and the people would return to those sites. This time, these military bases are the beginning of a program of development and investment that my government has requested.
Whether or not Operation Mercury succeeds will also depend in large part on the justice process that follows the interdictions and arrests. There are 80 national prosecutors embedded in the operation, including some specialized in environmental crimes, like Karina Garay.
For the crime of illegal mining, we have penalties that can go as high as 12 years, depending on whether the crime was committed in an aggravated manner, like, for example, in a protected natural area. Here in the state of emergency, we can use an expedited process when we see flagrant criminal acts and we don't need more evidence. We can take it to court within 48 hours and within 8 days can receive a sentence.
That all happens here, in this unassuming but groundbreaking environmental court. The Peruvian government opened it last year. Besides mining, the court also hears cases on other environmental crimes, like illegal logging and animal poaching. Garay scours satellite imagery for signs of new deforestation or emerging gold pits that require immediate action.
We look at the forest, we look at the coordinates, we look at the access points, how we can reach them. And we provide this information to those who develop the operational plans, the army, the police, and the navy.
Still, she admits, it's a game of cat and mouse.
Right now, there are people that have left La Pampa and are invading other areas. Yesterday, we had to respond to a new location based on a complaint we received, and it was indeed full of illegal miners in the middle of operations. We had to destroy everything we found, and this will continue to happen. It will always continue.
The financial incentive for gold mining will never go away, says environmentalist Luis Fernandez.
Practically speaking, it will be done in places like Madre Dios because of the poverty that exists in many places in Peru. Gold is literally under people's feet. So if you cut down some trees and dig down in the soil, you can make 10 times or 100 times what you would earn as a farmer in a month, in a single day.
After 5 months of the state of emergency, there was some sign of improvement. New research based on satellite imagery shows the rate of deforestation connected to gold mining has dropped more than 90% compared to the same period last year. But even the government of Peru admits military might alone will not be enough to fully end illegal gold mining. In part two of this report, NewsHour Weekend will explore what else can be done to reform production, create new economic opportunities, and even restore the damaged environment.
In May of this year, Las Vegas officials approved construction of a new building on its famed Strip. And like its casino neighbors, it's dedicated to machines built to strip tourists of their money in the name of entertainment. But you won't find any slot machines or any kind of gambling here. Christopher Booker has more.
When the machines start up inside the Las Vegas Pinball Museum, the sights and sounds of 20th century history come alive. From old-time parlor games to the space dreams of the 1960s to The Simpsons, they all work if you have a quarter to play. This all started over 50 years ago in Michigan, when Tim Arnold, then only in high school, started purchasing pinball machines. But these weren't just to play. Arnold installed his machines in frat houses and in the basement of a local pizza parlor.
It was an easy way to make money. All my friends had paper routes, and they had to get up in the morning and slog through the snow. And I would just go, take money out of pinball machines. It's a great racket. I would buy a game, put it out, run it till it paid for itself, and then just stick it back in storage and go buy another one. It's like baseball cards, only bigger.
In 1976, Arnold, along with his brother, opened a pinball arcade in East Lansing, Michigan. This was the first of what would be seven separate pinball arcades. But in 1990, Arnold sold his interest in the arcades and decided to retire and move to Las Vegas at the ripe age of 35.
Do you have a favorite?
As a curator, I'm not allowed to have an opinion. My job is to present the work as a whole and let people figure out what they like themselves. And truthfully, I've had so much of this for so many years, I'm kind of over it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Do you go home and interview your cat? When you get off work, you do something else for fun.
Since his first purchase, Arnold's collection has grown from one machine to over 2,000, 250 of which are now here in a warehouse just outside the Las Vegas airport for anyone to come and play. And word of the museum has spread. Arnold says people come from all over the world to play, often falling victim to a strange phenomenon when they walk through the door.
They come in here and they're walking down a row and all of a sudden they stop dead. And they say, there's the game. The first time I kissed a girl, I was playing that game. And they do what we call the nostalgia lockup. Because things like movies and music, you can relive all that stuff on the internet. But you haven't seen this pinball since you were a kid. It's still up in your brain somewhere. And then you see it again, and you just lock up. So we kind of like poke them with a stick and say, come on, go, 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 go. This is an actual toy factory that was at Disneyland. It delivers an actual plastic toy that you saw made in front of your eyes. There's less than 100 of these left in the world. And I've had people that come in here, and again, just do the nostalgia lockup. I was at Disneyland, and I bought one of those Donald Ducks.
But the Pinball Museum is not just about getting people to journey into their past. It functions as a social club, with all of the quarters, after operating costs, being donated to local charities.
We're like a Kiwanis Club or a Lions Club. We get together after work, hang out, and do fundraisers that help people that help people.
Do you think people who come through the door, who've heard about the Pinball Hall of Fame, are understanding that this is part of a social cause?
No, because we don't really push that. I don't really want to waste their time giving them the backstory. I just want to turn them upside down and shake all their tourist money out of their pockets.
Arnold has shaken enough pockets that he recently purchased a plot of land in the most valuable part of Las Vegas, the famed Strip, where he plans to build a bigger museum to house 700 of his machines. It's slated to open sometime next year.
It still amazes me that this stupid, backwards, amateur pinball club could somehow end up owning space right across from Mandalay Bay, some of the most expensive real estate on Earth. Somehow we're there.
Is there a pinball machine that you've been looking for years but can't find, or that's really rare?
I was going around when these things were unwanted, when I could literally go to a warehouse and buy all I wanted for $50 to $100. And sometimes it cost me more to rent the truck to bring them home than it did to buy the machines. And I've had old coots down in the South, just as I'm getting ready to pull away, says, I wasn't going to say anything, but you guys are a bunch of dopes. You just gave me $100 a piece for stuff I was going to take to the dump.
One person's trash is another man's treasure.
Right, right.
This is PBS NewsHour Weekend, Saturday.
Climate action is one of the main topics as the United Nations General Assembly gets underway here in New York City. Yesterday, leaders of indigenous people from countries around the world gathered to ask for support in their efforts to protect the environment and confront the effects of climate change on their lands.
No. Indigenous rights!
No.
Indigenous rights!
No.
Leaders from Brazil, Ecuador, Costa Rica, and Indonesia, all part of the Global Alliance of Territorial Communities, asked for help with a wide range of issues at a breakfast yesterday, including destruction of the Amazon rainforest.
We are expecting from the United Nations Climate Change Conference to have a space to denounce it and to get some help from all the leaders that will be here. This is not only a crime against the environment, but against all of humanity.
Indigenous peoples in the Amazon, who call themselves guardians of the forest, patrol their land and say they are facing increasing violence from illegal loggers. Also of concern, forest fires in Indonesia, often started for clearing land for palm oil plantations, that have destroyed more than 800,000 acres.
We're talking about climate crisis, climate emergency now. The burning in Amazon and the burning in Indonesia now. It is very clear that all is done with the target of clearing up the land for private companies.
A representative of the indigenous peoples group will be on hand for the United Nations Climate Action Summit with business, government, and environmental leaders on Monday. The UN says climate change is the defining issue of our time. On tomorrow's NewsHour Weekend, we'll have part two of our signature series from Peru, with a look at how environmentalists and the government are protecting and restoring vast areas of forest threatened by illegal gold miners. That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. I'm Megan Thompson. Thanks for watching. Have a good night.